You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
I'm Sean the Orange Course, a retro game fan from the U.S.
And I'm Kevin Vink Tambernino, an import gaming fan who took things one step further and moved to Japan.
Together, we make Famicom Dojo, a podcast that explores the Japanese origins of today's video games and consoles.
And speculates about their future, assuming they have one.
It's modern games with a retro twist.
This is the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast.
This week, it's April Fool's Day, so we didn't record an episode. No, really, there's no episode here. I mean, if we did have one, it'd be cool to talk about the Nintendo NX hoax, or maybe talk about a bunch of other hoaxes and rumors that have happened in video gaming. We would definitely have Future Retro, if we had an episode, which we don't. Yes, we were born to play all this video games. Hey, Vink, what are you doing?
I'm just appreciating physical buttons.
Listen
to the sound they make. Look, when I press it, it does a function. This is amazing.
What do you mean?
Didn't you see this? The Nintendo NX, the controller was revealed.
Oh. Well, I got some bad news for you, or good news, I guess, is the case. Maybe it was a total hoax.
It was a hoax?
Yeah.
Okay, I know that, but but let me pretend a hoax, you say? But it looks so real.
I mean, which version would you fall for is the question.
Okay. All right. We'll link these in the show notes. But the first picture was basically this kind of white, shiny surface with a bit of like, what was that? Like Unreal 4 tech demo footage on it.
Mm.
And everyone was like, nah, that ain't real. But then all of a sudden there were other pictures and those looked a lot more real.
Right.
Because, of course, the person who was making the second set looked at the first stuff and went, how can I? And 3D printed it. I mean, that's dedication.
Right.
The video was amazing. And I'm like, and the turnover time was quick. Like, it was like a day and a half later or something. If only these powers could be used for good. Would you use your powers for good or for awesome?
I know, like, the 4CR guys looked at this and went, you know, this looks like a rearview mirror. And, yeah. Like, posted a whole bunch of other additional prototypes and quote-unquote prototypes. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's just a mirror, isn't it? And, no, the truth is a lot more interesting.
But, you and I, we talked about this a little bit just by text messages. And I was like, I mean, I'm not totally willing to discount it, but like I like the idea of the whole controller was a screen. I thought that was pretty cool because you could have some like touch buttons there that would be like set up for the particular game, you know.
Mm.
I would love when I'm playing Xenoblade Chronicles to have a little sidebar of commonly used items that I could customize myself right on the side of the controller. I thought that would be really, really cool, but I was not getting behind the fact that all buttons would be touch. I need my physical buttons. That's why I don't iPhone game.
Oh, yeah. Like, I have this gaming device already, and I'm not really thrilled with it. But then, you know, haptic feedback, that rumor that comes back and never refuses to go away.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't imagine how haptic feedback would let me know where the button is before I press it, especially, yeah, you know, the act of touching the screen is the press.
Oh, I mean, I get the idea that it would let you know that you have pressed the button, but what button did I press? I suppose your finger, you know, muscle memory would take over eventually and you'd get used to it, but just like when I do the few iPhone games that I play that are, you know, but I mean, that's why I stopped playing Chrono Trigger on the iPhone, because I couldn't catch the rat. And what? I couldn't do it because you've played Chrono Trigger, right?
We've gone over this.
I know.
I always stop because of some kind of hardware failure.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you, but I always hope when I ask the question again, you've played Chrono Trigger, right, that you'll go, yes, in the time since we last talked about it, I have, in fact, played and beat Chrono Trigger.
Maybe that'd be my pile of shame instead, and I can explain that better so that everyone, or refresh everyone's memory.
Yes, let's shame you again on that. Okay, there's a part, oh, I don't know, not that far into the game, where you have to basically catch this this rat who's running around, or a mouse or something, and it's not too hard to do with an actual controller, which I found, but it's near impossible to do with touch controls. Or maybe some people are, maybe the younger generation will be like, move aside, old man, I can catch rats all day. But then they wouldn't be playing that game anyway, because it's not free to play with Twitter Incorporation.
Hmm.
Take that, youngins. Unless you really like the show, in which case, I'm hip, I'm with it. Durka, durka, durka.
You know, I looked that up recently, and the actual quote is, I'm with it, I'm hip.
Really?
Blew my mind, right?
No way.
It's like, Luke, I'm your father.
What about Luke, I'm your father?
It's, no, I am your father.
Did you know it's not played again Sam either from Casablanca?
I did, but I don't know what the actual line is.
Neither do I. Let me go get it. It's on Laserdisc.
No, get back
just
here.
Just a moment. I've got it right here. Okay, keep going.
There was a video that came out that kind of showed the concept of how this NX controller would work. And yeah. I got to say, it was a little compelling. Like, I never really believed it. Mostly, you know, because people were saying that it looks exactly like the patent image. And
yeah,
they are drawn that way because they are never going to look that way. So that,
well,
you basically
exactly
know that someone tries to pull something like this, that it's a fake.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they got a little convincing. So eventually the news leaked and, you know, the people doing the hoaxes admitted to it. Multiple hoaxes, mind you. But, oh, my gosh.
I will say that, yeah, I was starting to warm up to the idea as well. I still hoped for physical buttons, but the idea of, like, what was it, like the scroll wheels or something on the shoulder on the shoulder buttons,
yeah.
And I still think, like, that's one of the ways it could have been backwards compatible with the Wii U. You know what I mean? Because
right,
if it did have a full screen, you know, then, you know, there's the possibility that so many of these really, really, really good games wouldn't get, like, completely forgotten. Because if this is the first system, the first disc-based system that doesn't have backwards compatibility for Nintendo, I think a lot, personally, since Wii U is stopping production pretty soon, anyone listening to this podcast, watch Sean's Dreamcast video.
Right.
Because you might be ignoring the Wii U right now, but I think it's going to get expensive. And its library is going to be remembered in the same way that the good libraries of other unappreciated in their time consoles have gone up in price.
I should do a video about that when the Wii U does cease production. And like, just mirror that whole thing and then go back in time and, like, watch myself just fawning over the Wii U and be like, oh, no, bro, you're cool.
I would like to read to you our back and forth on this. You linked me to Reddit's pictures of the NX controller.
Sure, okay.
And I said, yeah, was just reading that. If real, I have mixed feelings. You wrote, definitely. I said, I think it looks sleek and dynamic screen layouts could be a game changer, but I needs my buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, is that how I talk?
Yep, that is how you talk.
Then you wrote, the haptic feedback button idea might work, ... And I wrote, it might. Then you wrote, I'm guessing pro classic controllers may still be supported. I wrote, and I've been wrong before. I thought both the Wiimote and gamepad were stupid at first. For context, and then I link you to this this NeoGAF thread about when the Wii U remote was announced and how everybody was, like, on suicide watch.
Right.
But the comment I like the best is, we went on for a while. I'm not going to read this whole conversation, but the comment I like the best was, I just wrote, if it's region free, I'll buy it day one. Like, I don't even care. Like,
okay, so yeah, let's talk about some video game rumors and hoaxes then.
Oh, man.
If you like the podcast or videos and just want to help out, well, there's a way you can do that. Just sponsor an episode of the Famicom Dojo video game podcast by going to littlepodcast.com, finding the Famicom Dojo logo, and clicking on the sponsor button. We would like to thank you for your generous contribution, so leave us a message that we can read on the show about you, or just drop us a line on why you like the podcast and videos, and then share this podcast with all your friends and brag to them about how you paid us to be nice to you, or something. Let's break it down how we're going to do this. So there are the outright hoaxes. Such as the Nintendo NX and Nintendo On, which we're going to talk about momentarily
Bigfoot.
Right. There are glitches, which lead to the hoaxes in a lot of cases, and or removed features.
Yes.
And then just general rumors. And then we'll round it off with rumors that turn out to be true.
Ooh. Oh, my favorite ones. My favorite ones. We've really never talked about the Nintendo On. That's what you're getting at, right?
I had never heard about it before you mentioned it to me.
Oh, my goodness. I'm surprised you don't know about the Nintendo On.
I know. I don't remember anything about this.
Well, is this before we started Famicom Dojo?
Yes, it is. It happened in 2005, like right ahead of like the revolution stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, I was working for 4CR at that time, so I was following the news pretty closely, I guess. But yeah, that's before we started Famicom Dojo. Otherwise, we definitely would have talked about it.
Oh, yeah.
But basically, this video came out and linked in the show notes. Please watch this video. So I'm not going to talk about it too much other than it's weird. Like, it starts off with like this history of Nintendo, and then it's like showing, I don't know, tech demo-ish, like, look at how many castles we can make. I'm not sure how to describe it exactly, but it ends with this thing that looks like a headset. Like a whole like headset, like how we imagined VR would be in the 90s. And it's labeled the Nintendo On. And the thing is, the production values of the video are, I mean, I suppose laughable now, but at the time seemed possible. The thing that seemed weird to me was that the video seemed a little cluttered to be a Nintendo video and didn't give like enough actual information about anything. And for me, I thought it might have been a hoax, because one would think that the early video would be like Japanese or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than this one that just seemed kind of random. But enough people believed that it could be true, and enough people wanted it to be true, that it got quite a bit of circulation.
That helmet, on the other hand, seems like it restricts a lot of circulation. It's funny because a little over 10 years later, there are like actual VR headsets coming out this year, which is fulfilling one of our predictions. Well, yours it specifically is.
Yes.
And the prices. Nintendo is not jumping on that bandwagon anytime soon, I can tell you that much.
No, but, well, who knows? You never know. I mean, we don't know what the NX is. We're back at square one again.
Oh, no, don't even. All right, next.
And Nintendo NX will be a virtual reality headset.
Ah! Intellivision next, to be specific. And I don't know anything about this either.
No, the Intellivision, well, that's because there's nothing really to know. This one hurt me deeply because I think we mentioned in the episode where Game Dave was on that my first console was the Intellivision.
Right.
And for me, that just had a tremendous nostalgic value. And the rumor was, and this is in an issue of EGM from 2000-ish, when I still... Gosh, you know, I had the internet back then. Why was I reading magazines? Anyway, read it in a magazine. that to compete with the upcoming Xbox and upcoming GameCube and current gen Dreamcast. They were saying that Mattel was throwing their hat back in the ring. They were a big enough company that it seemed somewhat believable. And, you know, Microsoft had just announced that they were making a console, so it seemed like anything was possible. You know.
Right.
And they said the Intellivision Next was going to come out, and it was going to have, you know, it was going to be on par with the other consoles. And I actually bought into it. I believe that that was a real thing. I mean, not for too long, because as I said, the internet was around. But I remember telling a few people that I was excited for it, and they went, "What?" Mm. And so when it was proved to be a hoax, I went back to the magazine. And in that same issue of the magazine, they announced that Conker's Bad Fur Day existed. Because I'd been following the development of when it was like called like Conker 12 Tales or 9 Tales. I don't know. It was something.
It's like Conker's Quest. Good. Yeah. There were. Well, there, you know, there was like a Game Boy, like
yeah,
Pocket
Game
Tales
Boy.
That came out that was, you know, a legitimate.
You know, cutesy, yeah.
Yeah.
And so. When I saw that, I automatically assumed that that was another April Fool's joke, as it was in the April edition. And up until, like, gameplay videos actually started coming out, I completely believed that just a lot of different sites were in on this joke.
Okay.
I totally didn't believe that was real. You know what? I still don't believe it's real.
I've played it and I don't believe it's real. I have Live Reloaded and I haven't finished it, so I don't even believe it's real.
Oh, man. If only that one wasn't real. No, I mean, it's okay, but it's so weird that the one on the like the edgy hardcore Xbox was the one that was censored. That's weird. You know?
I don't remember. That's on my pile of shame, too. Bummer.
We're just coming up with all kinds of shame.
I know.
Also, BMX XXX, the only version that was totally uncensored was the GameCube version. That's so weird. It was like Nintendo was kind of like, oh man, we've got this really bad reputation. Let's try too hard. But, yeah. I mean, not that I know. I never played that game. Crap.
Right?
But yeah, Nintendo on Intellivision Next, Conker. Okay, that one was real, but
yeah.
What you got?
There are a lot of Mario related ones, I guess, but I'll limit it to the rumor, and then eventually turned. Some people decided to hoax it by giving specific instructions on how to do this, but how to play as Luigi or Yoshi in Mario 64, because you can. You can find Yoshi.
Yeah,
he's in the game.
On the roof.
So it's like, well, they have the model in the game. There's got to be a way to play as him, right?
Yeah.
No.
What?
No. There's no way. But like, I don't have any specific examples of what people said to do for either of those. But it's like some ridiculous nonsense that takes you a lot of time. And it's just a huge, a tremendous waste. And like a lot of these next examples of hoaxes are just like that, where. Things that we wish were true, someone eventually says, oh yeah, that's totally true, and then we had to like believe this scenario where the developers deliberately made this awesome feature to the game and then hid it from us because they hate us.
Yeah, well,
and our
yeah.
propensity to believe those things is just astounding to me. But what what is interesting about the Luigi rumor is that there's apparently like an engraving in the game. It says like L is real 2401, and no one knows what that means. So people...
Listen, we just haven't found out how to do it yet. I'm sure it involves sequence breaking and the morph ball.
Oh, good lord. Oh, I mean, that stuff's
yep.
interesting.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I want to go there, but...
Maybe not today, but we will.
Well, okay, you mentioned Metroid. You mentioned Metroid. Everyone knows the Justin Bailey code.
Yes.
Right. So, obviously... In Tomb Raider, you can, you know, take all of Lara Croft's clothes off, too.
Well, yeah. That's the only reason some people bought that game.
Ah, we've come so far.
No. I mean, No, actually, I wasn't a PlayStation owner at that time, so I think my first experience with that game was the Mac OS version of Tomb Raider 2, which came with my computer,
Yeah.
which was one of those Bandai Blue iMacs. I don't know, like that was me playing a game that I think should have been a console game on a computer with a keyboard, and it was not a great experience for me. So, like,
No.
and since the internet was already around by that time, it was pretty easy to like dispel. Well, the thing is, when you've got computer versions of games, of course, most of these things that we think, oh wow, that would be cool, exist as mods.
Right, right,
You know what
right. And so
I mean?
that makes it harder sometimes.
Yeah,
No pun
because
intended.
wow. But like if there had been a PC version of Mario 64, I'm sure that within days a Luigi would have been modded in, you
Right,
know?
right, right. I mean, this is a whole Project M thing for crying out loud.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Which is amazing in its own regard. But yeah. So yeah, there was tons of rumors and of different, increasingly impossible ways of getting Lara Croft to take her clothes off, which actually culminated in the true code of pay Angelina Jolie a lot of money and CG remove her tattoos. It was from the back, though.
Yeah.
Chris Berry was in that movie.
He was, and
Chris Berry, Rimmer from Red Dwarf, was in that movie. And this is how much of a geek I am.
Lena.
Miss Jolie was in that movie, and I'm sure she was the main attraction, but the only reason I went to actually see that movie in the theater was because I heard Chris Berry was in it. I'm
That
not
was
even kidding.
my excuse to go see it. And
Oh, okay.
there was still some tasteful side boob.
I guess. And we didn't even have to enter a code. Do you
Ah,
think Chris Berry
goodness.
was in the room when that was filmed? I mean, he was in that scene, but like,
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
I think our podcast is going in a bad direction
Okay,
right now.
let's bring it back. Let's bring it back to Pokemon then.
Okay. Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Where am I going with this?
You had to find the truck, right? You had to find this truck.
Yes, Pokemon Red
Okay.
and Blue, Mew.
Yes.
To catch them all, you had to get Mew, and the only way to get Mew was at live events, which Nintendo still freaking does for this series. And 20 years later, and yeah, there's like a delivery truck by the SS Anne, I believe. And the rumor was the hoax. Ultimately, was that you find some way to move the truck and Mew was underneath.
Now,
So,
which is sad in a way because it means Mew got hit by a truck.
or
But
he's just hiding underneath it. Jeez.
I don't know. Yokai Watch, like. Oh, you haven't played Yokai Watch. Never mind. Anyway, so I didn't play Pokemon back in the day, as my songs will indicate. But even I knew about this rumor. That's how widespread it was. Like, I wasn't even a Pokemon player, but like, people had told me about this rumor, and I so really the only way was at a live event. Or, oh, answer me this. Mew, like, I always thought the dumbest Pokemon name in the entire world was Mewtwo, because Mew was so incredibly impossible to find. Most people wouldn't have them, but would have the second one.
Okay.
Is Like, was Mewtwo in the first Pokemon game, or was he added later?
Oh, I think he was added later because Mew was 151 out of 151, I believe.
I see.
No, I take it back. I take it back. Mewtwo might have been in the first game.
So Mew was actually an official numbered Pokemon.
Yeah,
Wow.
I'm pretty sure, but I mean that'll get to a different to the glitches section, so
Okay,
we'll
yeah,
save that for later.
let's.
A little tease,
Okay.
in all of this. There was, we skipped around a little bit. I probably should have jumped to this one instead of going back to Mew, but, you want to take a break from the, disrobed women bit, but there was a Square game I'd never heard of apparently where similar thing had happened.
Oh my gosh. This one's interesting because, well, let me just tell you, the game is called, Suisho no Dragon, and it was made by Square.
Is it about a gay dragon? I mean, it's the Swish no Dragon?
No. Sui means like water, like Wednesday or clear. Let's call it Crystal Dragon.
I really want to play a game about an effeminate dragon now.
Well, I mean, this might be the one. I haven't played this enough. So, I mean, it could be. Anyway, Square game, pre-Final Fantasy. Back when they were producing not hits, but it's a point and click game actually. I wonder if someone is fan translated. Probably. Anyway, music, Nobu Uematsu, one of his other contributions. But it's a point and click adventure. It's for the Famicom Disk System, so it actually had like some really nice like full screen. Characters, you know, like point and clicks do. But anyway, there's this one scene. It's like an iconic scene because it's, I don't know, it was depicted in like all of like the artwork and stuff, where the female protagonist, Cynthia, is like standing with her arms spread outwards, like, I don't know, towards the sun or something. But Family Computer Magazine, what they were like, Famiga, was a big magazine at the time, really, really big. And the magazine started this rumor that it was possible, through a code, to start a game of Yakuken, which is a kind of a strip rock paper scissors game. Don't Google that, by the way. But there's a lot of video
games. That's gonna work.
There's a lot of
video. Nailed it, Vink.
Yeah. There's a lot of games, especially on the Saturn. Anyway, but that it was possible to play a strip rock paper scissors game with this protagonist, and they backed it up by showing these screenshots, these mock-up screenshots, which actually is kind of impressive for, you know, the 1986. But, you know, they did this and they posted these next to the thing. Now, it wasn't a malicious thing, although I'm sure a lot of people who fell for that probably think it was. I'm guessing the sales went up on the game for people trying to figure it out for themselves. But the reason they did it was they believed that that a lot of other magazines were like copying their text, their stuff. So they put something that was incredibly fake to see if other newspapers would, other game publications would print it, because obviously it didn't work. So, you know, they wanted to see how much it would spread. I'm unable to find out if it did get printed in other places, but I bet it did. And of course, years later, people who maybe were so disappointed that was fake actually created a Flash game where you could do that.
Now, this is crazy to me because, like getting caught doing this, it's like, this is that kind of thing I expect them to say, honestly.
that's true. That's true. That's what they said afterwards. But yeah, it could have just been some people pranking people. But there's not so much of a tradition of, like, April Fool's stuff, unlike some countries.
Oh, we'll get to that.
America.
We'll get to that probably soon. Let's see where we're at in the list here.
All right.
Boy. All right. Not quite there yet. We got to get through some Final Fantasies first. Well, maybe. Who knows? They might have been involved in this. But you know Final Fantasy VII, right?
I do know Final Fantasy VII.
Yes. So there's a certain character who dies.
Don't tell me. I haven't beat it yet.
Oh, jeez.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
First act. It's the first act death. If you don't know by now, I'm sorry. There's no hope for you. But,
is it the first act? I think it's at the end of the first disc, right? Or is that how the acts are separated?
Oh, who knows? How many discs are there? two?
Three.
There are three. Yeah, that's, I'd say that's the end of the first act then.
Okay.
And yeah, so your party member Eris dies, and you, there's a
someone Eris?
Supposed, yeah, Eris.
You mean Aerith?
Oh God, let's. I don't listen.
I'm sorry.
I'm
gonna call her Eris.
Okay, that will alleviate any. I don't like the way Aerith sounds.
Eris.
Like, if it were something that sounded like something in English, I don't know. Maybe it is, but I'm not aware of it. But it just sounds like you're talking Ithane Aerith with a lisp.
Okay.
So I don't like saying Aerith. It just sounds wrong to me. But anyway, there's apparently,
you know,
yeah.
Square just should have used her as a character in Swish Dragon.
Swish Dragon.
Sorry. Oh, I think we might have to cut that.
Oh God, I don't know.
Listen.
Think about that one.
If we do keep that in,
yeah.
I would just like to say for the record,
yeah,
that a great number of friends of mine, close personal friends, are Swish Dragons,
and they would find it hilarious.
They would like this.
Oh God. Yeah. So there's. There were rumors, you know, kind of like the whole Mario 64 thing about how you could possibly bring her back. And this one is helped by the fact that her limit break is still in the game, which she could never level up enough to actually use unless...
Wait, she can't? Like totally she can't?
There's some combination... I'm trying to remember. There's some combination of things you need to equip a limit break. And I don't think it's possible for her. I just don't. Like, there's either... Because I don't think you can even get it until after that first disc, I think, is the problem. Mm-hmm. There's like a sequence issue there.
Okay.
So you could get her high enough, but she could never use it. So it's what I think happened here, and this kind of ties into the removed features part of the game, is that they probably didn't intend her to die at first and probably designed this stuff outside of the story. And then just forgot to take that element out. And it's just like you get her limit break and then you just, you know, try not to cry, roll over, cry forever.
Awesome.
All right. And then there's a Final Fantasy IV one that I'm not as familiar with. So you can take that one home.
All right. Spoilers right now for Final Fantasy IV. That is Final Fantasy II in the United States. If you haven't beat it by now, you know what? Just stop the podcast right now. Beat the game.
Should only take it 200 hours, I mean.
No. Well, maybe. It was quite a long game. But anyway, if you don't want to hear that, skip ahead. Oh, I won't be talking about it more than 2 minutes. Okay, here we go. There's an old man in this game called Tella. And he used to be a very powerful wizard, but now he's old. And... during one boss battle, you need to cast this spell called, I don't know, my friends and I always pronounce it Mateo, or it could be Latin, so it might be a different pronunciation, but it's a big spell. It does a lot of damage. So by casting this spell, he sacrifices his life because it takes so much of his energy, so much that he dies. And that's the dramatic point of the game. But later in the game, one of the characters, Rydia, actually near the end of the game, actually levels up enough that she is capable of casting this spell. Which at the time I went, wait a minute, Tella didn't have to die if I would have just grinded more early in the game. Now I don't believe it's actually possible to get Rydia up to this because she goes through a lot of changes before this happens, and I'm sure they would have. Had a way to lock it out. But at the time, I thought I really need to do another playthrough of this game just to see if that's a possibility. But as you said, it's like a 200-hour game. And to level her up to that point, because this takes place at about, oh, I don't know, at about the Aerith level of completion of the game, so right. About a third. I really don't think it's possible to have leveled her up. If anybody's listening, and if anybody can tell me why it's not possible, I'd love to know, but I gave up on that because other Final Fantasy games were coming out by the time I was doing that. But for me, it seemed so strange that they would include the spell that killed another character as one that you do, and she learned it with no fanfare whatsoever. It's just like, you learned Mateo. They should have at least had like some kind of cutscene there.
Right? Right. All right.
Ah. You know, because, you know, mark the occasion. You know, because just like when you're saying that she, that, you know, Erisu had a limit break programmed in, it's like the developers, you know, this was a major turning point, but yet they still let her have this spell. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it just seems strange to me that there wasn't that closure there. Okay, that's about 2 minutes. Let's talk about something else.
All right. Next is a character from a fighting game.
Yeah, I love fighting games.
Yeah. This could be any number of characters, but let's talk about Shenlong.
Shenlong. Oh, my gosh. Shenlong is... Oh, should we save him for the ones that turned out to kind of be true?
You know what? Yeah, let's save both of those because we have two we're going to talk about. Okay. All right. Let's end this section then.
Okay.
I love the way we're accidentally teasing this stuff. But the Majora's Mask HD remake, not the 3DS one that ended up coming out, but something else entirely different.
Now, that was, now who reported this, that this was true? I mean,
I don't know.
I've seen this as well, but like, I think by the time I saw it, it was well established that like fans had made it. But like, was a magazine or a website proclaiming this as the as a leak, or?
I barely remember this, so I really can't tell you.
Okay, but it looks great, and sometimes it just like Nintendo hire these people who are leaking stuff. Are we linking it to the show notes?
Yes. Yeah, let's link the video in the show notes. I think I believe I have a copy.
Okay, so this is, yeah, so this came out and it is a remake of Majora's Mask that looks really, really good. Not that the 3DS one looked bad, but I think this is the one that people really would have wanted.
Right. I do like the 3DS Majora's Mask and everything, and have done a few comparisons. I'm on Recognizance just to see the differences between the two versions of the game. But
yeah,
you watch this video and it's just like, oh man, especially because Twilight Princess HD remake came out recently.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not much to it. It's basically the part where, Deku Scrub Link meets, the mask salesman whose name escapes me at the moment. But it's just really gorgeously rendered HD, like probably too good for even what Nintendo was capable of at the time for HD.
Yeah, maybe.
I would say like a lot of the shading and stuff. Maybe. But like, I love this game so much, and like, have it be so pretty and not playable is just anger inducing. And it kind of goes to your point earlier about like, if these people weren't doing hoaxes, they could be doing some real good for the world.
I know.
Anyway, all right, moving on to glitches.
Yay.
All right, let's loop it back to Pokemon again. You were the missing number glitch.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember if I tried to make this happen or not, and I can't remember what the actual thing to do is, but you can capture a Pokemon that will corrupt your game.
Basically. Really?
I think it corrupts the game.
Really?
Doesn't it?
I think I did hear about that. Yeah.
Well, yes. It is the result of three corrupting events, it says. The first is, I'm reading this right off of Wikipedia. I'm sorry.
All right.
Full disclosure. The first is the game's random battle encounter system, where each area assigns a value to a Pokemon and a data buffer. Nobody has assigned the buffer on the east coast of Cinnabar and Seafoam. And so this relates to some glitches we're going to talk about later about how like, you know, data registers are used and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then there's an in-game tutorial, which, temporarily saves the player's name into the data buffer. And this, does kind of the same thing. And the third factor is the game's error handling system. Again, the data buffer uses by those non-existing Pokemon. And it causes the appearance of a Pokemon named Missing Number, MISSINGNO, which is short for Missing Number. So you probably shouldn't capture it this happens.
No.
Yeah, so what it says here, the quantity of the sixth item in the player's item menu is usually increased by a large amount, and the game's Hall of Fame Pokemon gallery becomes permanently glitched. And graphical glitches may also occur. Like, the actual image for the Pokemon is like a random sequence of tiles.
Yeah.
Basically, if I recall correctly. It works. The Pokemon itself works and comes up as number 0000. But it's just a scrambled D shape. Is there a picture of it? There's no picture. There it is. There is a picture in the Wikipedia entry. But yeah, you don't want this to happen. If anyone has the Wii, is it on 3DS or just Wii U? The virtual console version.
Maybe just 3DS.
Okay, yeah, let us know. Let us know if this still works or if they took it out of the game.
You know, I mean, since they added in quite a bit of stuff, I bet they fixed it.
It's entirely likely. The next set of glitches they did fix in later versions of these games, for instance. So if you've watched the actual video series of Famicom Dojo, you will know that we've covered a few of these before, but Super Mario Brothers has quite a few of them. The most recently discovered one was one that lets you do beetle tipping, which is very convoluted and requires a amount of skill that I have not been able to do to bring to full completion, and a little bit of luck. But specifically, the ones people probably know about are the ability to jump over a flagpole in certain situations, which leads to endless running, because Mario will miss the entrance to the castle at the end of the level, and then we'll just keep going. There is an issue if you get over 255 lives I don't remember what happens exactly. I don't know if it like brings you back to the start menu or just glitches out entirely or what the deal is. But we did our turtle tipping video, and because you can get infinite lives that way, basically, it's like whatever you do, make sure you stay under 256, because you will just waste all your effort, essentially. And this is, again, data buffer is 8 bits. It'll be a data overflow and it won't work properly. And then of course the minus worlds glitch, which, we have a whole 20 minute video on this, so there's no point in going into it here, but, there are some hit detection problems, that allows you to, circumvent the normal path Mario would take, which, allows certain values loaded into, again, more data buffers to not be refreshed properly. And you get, a version of the World 5 pipe. And if you go into the left or right pipes, because in the World 5 there's only a central pipe, then you end up in a minus world. And depending on which version of Super Mario Brothers you play, that minus world will be different. Dun, dun, dun.
Nice.
Awesome.
Very awesome. We're going to talk about the Castlevania staircase glitch?
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Okay. In the original Famicom, in the original Famicom version of Castlevania, there's like a staircase that there's like right before you're gonna fight Dracula, there's this staircase, but there's no actual sprite there. It's just kind of like an invisible staircase, and it doesn't really do anything. It doesn't really lead anywhere. And they took it out of the North American versions anyway, so only like Famicom fans really would have seen it. It's in the original disc system version. But here's showing that it was widespread enough for the developers to care about it. They put that glitch back in, not as a glitch, but they programmed an invisible staircase into Dracula X Rondo of Blood, which actually goes to a secret room with all kinds of cash and stuff. And then again, that one was Japan exclusive, but also in Symphony of the Night, right before Dracula, if you can activate a switch, which will reveal a hidden staircase in approximately the same place.
Nice.
So like, this is back when Konami cared about video games enough to actually reference like things that were, I mean, the first one was a glitch, but the other ones were intentionally put there as a reference to a glitch. That would be like, that would be like if Nintendo decided that they were going to put on the virtual console the 256 level Minus World collection.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Oh man, I'd buy that. Nintendo.
I mean, you know,
and it should come with tennis. It should come with tennis.
Oh jeez.
Nice. Sorry. That's a deep reference to a video we're going to make in the future.
Well, you just made me sad about, because you mentioned, like, you know, Konami back at the time when they cared about references of video games. I would just say back at the time when Konami still made video games.
Back in a time when Konami cared, yeah.
Right. Well, you know, Nintendo did do this in after a fashion for Super Mario Brothers 2, which never came out in the U.S., where there was a world 9, and then what was special levels like A through what was it, D
something,
I don't remember exactly. And I guess in a sense there were a bunch of like extra levels in Super Mario World as well, but like what I understand is that the world 9 and beyond stuff was a deliberate reference to the extra hidden levels idea that was implied by this glitch, but wasn't really an intent to hide levels from people. And then just outside of that, there are a number of 3D floor glitches in different games where you can end up outside the designated playable area.
Yeah.
Ocarina of Time, Mario 64 have a bunch of these. There's the whole get on thing where you can tilt the cart in just a way to make the game glitch out in really interesting, fun ways. The most popular, the meme naming one of those being, you tilt like a GoldenEye cartridge for N64 and the character is just like still move around properly, but they aren't animated and they just like end up in all these weird positions. People made entire videos of like themselves jumping up and like contorting themselves and like just doing like these single frame cuts to make it seem like they were just spazzing out. Glorious. Yep. Glorious. Okay. Removed features.
All right.
And like the glitches, these also lend credence to these hoaxes that we heard about earlier.
Yeah.
My favorite removed feature is the Pol's voice one.
Ah, yes.
Yes. And again, referencing one of our videos.
Yes. Please watch our videos.
Please watch our videos. So in the microphone roundup episode of season one that we did, this was for 2008.
It
hasn't been quite 8 years, but a lot happens when you translate a game from the Japan to the US, and especially if there are hardware differences. In this case, there was a hardware difference that there was no microphone on the NES. But there was one on the Famicom, and not really having a lot of use for this feature. Nintendo programmed in the Famicom Disk System version of The Legend of Zelda a little voice activated feature where if you are on a screen with a Pol's voice and you make a loud noise into that microphone, it will destroy any on the screen.
Yep.
And now there's no reason to watch the video.
Thanks. No, you can watch the video to find out how that also relates to Kid Icarus.
Yes. There are a bunch of interesting microphone-based game tricks that we talk about. But we also show you in that video how the fastest way to test this yourself is. Very, very fun. My favorite one – actually, no, my new favorite. That used to be my favorite. My new favorite is our data recorder video. Because the missing feature there is if you ever played like Excitebike or Mach Rider, save feature that never worked. And I'm sure that there are a lot of pet theories as to why that happened, like what you weren't doing right to make the game save when you like wanted to load up your levels again. But the truth is, unfortunately, it was, again, a peripheral that didn't exist in the United States.
Yep.
Namely the Famicom keyboard, the family keyboard, whatever the official name is.
Yep.
Linking to a tape deck that records your game saves. Yeah. And so for those who are curious, at least in this case, if you buy Virtual Console versions of these games, although I think it's only in the Wii U one, I'm not entirely sure, it might be in 3DS too, the save feature will work.
Yes.
And pretty much, yeah, Wrecking Crew. Is Mach Rider out? I don't think I bought that one, though. And then Excitebike. This should work on all those on the Wii U at least, and maybe, or maybe not in 3DS. Not entirely sure. Oh, sorry. The Excitebike one in 3DS will work because I think they changed the entire way that the screen works. Because it's really like a 3D Classics version of Excitebike, so it's not the original game. That's why it's different. Okay. And also, the Pole's voice thing, there's a reference to that, I believe, in Phantom Hourglass, because there's a microphone on the 3DS, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last remove feature I want to talk about, because it combines a few of the things we talked about, was a secret room in The Link to the Past, which you can get to by exploiting the floor glitch.
There you go.
Right? Right. I guess some kid won a contest. He was able to... was it Chris Houlihan, something like that?
Something like that. Name, yeah. Be in the game, yeah.
Yeah. So he won a contest, got to put a message in the game, and they removed the level from the game. Nintendo, I know you're listening. That kid is probably strung out on heroin right now. Hopefully, he's listening to our podcast and has found a reason to live. Shame on you, Nintendo.
Wait. But you can get there, right?
You can get there now, but Nintendo's like, you know what? Forget this kid.
Really? Is that how that story turned out? Because, I mean, I've heard about this room and I've seen pictures of it, but you can't get there by normal means?
Listen, you. Okay, I'm going to look this up right now.
I thought you were going to say, I have this expert.
A Link to the Past secret Chris Houlihan room. That's what comes up when I, five different entrances. Okay, there's a video about five different entrances. So I would like to read something, though, that I can not have to play a video for while we're doing our podcast.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Fun fact, he's Justin Bailey's best friend.
Right. Okay, so it's a series of dashes using the Pegasus boots. And if you do it, yeah, you'll fall into an underground room. So this is, I've heard about this one where you can use a bomb to knock Link to the lowest few pixels of the screen or use the Pegasus boots and then mess things up during a screen transition and then you drop into it. Yeah, so it involves like dash boots and basically just freaking out the game. But you can get there, but it's, none of them are like official ways. I mean, they made this room so secret that you couldn't even play it. So this again lends credence to rumors that devs put things in and then take them out to spite you. But really, it's there are plenty of reasons why like things are taken out of games and then they just don't uncode it, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose getting back in there and taking out some small bits of data is actually really difficult. There was a game, I don't remember, it was a PlayStation game that actually the demo discs that they released were actually the entire game, just with code put in to keep you from playing past the demo part. But people found a code to bypass that years later, and so people who had the demo actually had the full game because... You know, the being able to take some content out and make sure that it doesn't crash the whole program, you know, is very troublesome. So
well, not only that, but like distribution before the internet was also a thing you had to worry about.
Of course.
So if all you had to do to get someone the full game was to give them a code to unlock it, then you don't have to like send them like another disc and like a floppy disc in those days. Yeah, that would have been a costly proposition. I mean, I remember installing Windows on 30 double-sided floppy disks. Okay.
Really? Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, good times. All right. Final section. Rumors that turned out to be true.
Yay.
The Nintendo PlayStation prototype that was shown, and people were like looking at the yellow and it's like, oh, this guy totally faked it. You know, kind of like Nintendo NX thing. It's totally real, and Gadget even has an article about how real it is.
Yeah, they were like, it confirms what we've heard. And I'm like, okay, but really?
Really? I mean, you know, especially because the guy like didn't have the hookups, he said, and was afraid to run it. So it's like, you know, I can't turn it on to show you it's real. And it's like, oh, hoax, hoax, hoax. Nope, it was real. But let's circle back to the one we teased earlier.
Yep.
Shenlong.
Ooh, yes. Wow, it took us a Shenlong time to get there.
It sure did.
Sure did. So this guy started out as, you know, we could do an entire podcast just about EGM rumors, to tell you the truth.
Oh, God.
There These are guys. So many. Well, I mean, they did, but it was a tradition for them. They did like April Fools, you know, and we talked about that earlier because the Intellivision Next one was from those rumors as well as like Lego Halo and just all kinds of stuff. But this one was so nice they did it twice.
Ugh.
In 1992 and 1997, they said that there was a character called Shenlong. He was meant to be a character that you could unlock in Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo. He was going to be a secret boss. And then they also, years later, said that he was going to be a character included in Street Fighter 3. It comes into an English localization of Street Fighter 2. It's supposed to be like, if you cannot overcome the Dragon Punch, you cannot win, which is like, Shoryuken no Waburan, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But it was translated to, you must defeat Shenlong to stand a chance. People reading that thought not Shenlong was like this move, but was a person.
Okay.
It's due to a mistranslation. So there's already these ideas going around about the existence of the Shenlong character in the game. And then EGM decided to run with that and say, yeah, there is. And they said how to do it.
Jerks.
Yep. But
so open and shut. Yep.
Nope. Because it was proved to be a hoax, but like, you know, this isn't the internet was around, but not a lot more people were reading magazines than using the internet. So they had the guts to do it again in 1997.
What?
As Street Fighter 3 was coming out, they talked about that the character could be included. Now, how could they get away with this? You know, this is we're more in the age of the internet right now. So how could they get away with this? Because Capcom was kind of in on the joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Street Fighter the movie, the game, Shenlong is mentioned in the endings for Ryu, Ken, and Akuma.
Interesting.
They included him in, and apparently there was talk of actually including him as a character in the game, as like a hidden character. I mean, he wasn't in the film, but he would be like a hidden character in the game. It never came about, but you know, there was talk about it. So when they had him as a rumored character in Street Fighter 3, there was, you know, it was a possibility. You know, Capcom had already mentioned him in one of their, well, projects they don't talk about as much. And then when Street Fighter 4 came along, fans kind of started requesting this character to be included, and Capcom announced Shenlong as a secret unlockable character in their Japanese development blog. He wasn't actually in the game. He's always kind of a legendary, mythical character, but like, this is a joke that Capcom's been very self-aware of. No, Shenlong is not an unlockable character in any game, but there is an inclusion in actual games that were made.
All right, I got you beat.
Okay, beat me.
Ermac.
Ermac.
I'll beat you with Ermac.
Is that the Mac that came after the iMac? Because it might it might have come with Tomb Raider 3.
Ah, good grief! No. It's basically a very similar story, except for we're talking about Mortal Kombat.
I see. Instead. You see, Mortal Kombat copied everything.
Right. So what this comes from is something that Midway usually does with their stuff, their arcade games, like a diagnostics error macro screen. So Ermax is what it's called. And this is what showed the existence of an actual secret character, a reptile, in later versions of the game. So you would see a number of reptile appearances and fights and wins or losses or whatever. So Reptile was an actual unlockable character, but the misunderstanding of what these messages meant made people think there was a character called Ermac. Even though that apparently this was later removed from this screen was later removed, it didn't stop the rumors.
Yeah.
And of course, EGN put a hand in this one too.
Okay.
Because why stop at one fighting game secret character rumor when you can do two, or I guess three. Since they doubled down on one of them. But in this case, Ermac was finally added as an actual character in Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 and was a palette swapped reptile, I believe. So he had a red tunic instead of the green or the yellow or blue or whatever.
I think I stopped playing after 2, really. Is there a reason to play modern Mortal Kombat?
Geez, I'm losing track here. 10 was the most recent one. I think the one that was just called Mortal Kombat, which I believe is really Mortal Kombat 9.
Wasn't there Mortal Kombat versus Batman or something?
Maybe because this studio also did Injustice, and a lot of the hallmarks of what was really cool about the ninth Mortal Kombat game was also in Injustice.
Okay.
So they added that thing where you can pull off a move and you see an x-ray mode and like bones and whatever crunching and awesome terrible damage to your opponents. But I mean, that leads into a whole thing about fatalities and fatalities and how to execute those and things that didn't really exist. And I'm sure that was all spun out of rumors and funny jokes that the developers worked into the games,
the nudalities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which didn't exist, but that another that Tattoo Assassin implemented in order to fulfill the prophecy. I don't know.
Right. Oh man.
Yeah.
That was a lot of stuff we talked about. Maybe we'll excise some of that for an audio bonus.
Yeah, maybe.
Because we gotta move on. Yes, we were born to die on this retirement.
Hey, what's your favorite movie? This week it's my favorite too, even if it's Roadhouse.
Roadhouse is the story of a big city bouncer with the secret power to rip people's throats out who comes to a small town full of really dumb people to be a bouncer there.
This is 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie.
Listen to 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie every Monday on the Little Podcast Network. Let's talk about some future retro.
Alright.
Future Retro is a segment where we talk about contemporary video games that have the potential to be remembered as classics.
Or classics that we've played for the first time, or just more recently.
And in Pile of Shame, we talk about the games we haven't been playing, and try to convince each other if we should.
Or not.
Go ahead. Sorry, no, I was going to say, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. Mine's quick, I think. So I've been playing this game. Maybe you've heard of it. It's called Galaga.
Wait. wait. What?
What? How? It's made by Namco. Came out a while back.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
I've heard of Galaga, yes.
Have you heard of this? Well, there's a new one.
Oh, thank God.
It's not that new. It's not that new. Right. Because I think the servers have already been shut off.
Oh, no.
I mean, for the high scores and things. But I picked up Galaga Legions DX for my PlayStation 3 for 99 cents. It's, okay. I think it's normally $6 or $10. I don't know. They had a nice sale that was on a little while ago. And that's how much. Did you hear that? Every company who's trying to sell me digital content, that's how much I'll pay for it.
Nice.
99 cents. But anyway, it's fun. It's a fun little game. It's, have you ever played like Geometry Wars?
No.
Or just one of those games that you move with one stick and you shoot with the other stick.
Yeah.
I know the one that'll always come up to me is Smash TV, although it was before the analog sticks. But
yeah. But I was thinking of
I made a game with zombies in it.
Yep, that one too. But there was a Wii U game I got for Virtual Console that was, yeah, Nano Assault Neo, which I really really enjoyed.
I played the demo of that. That was like at launch, right?
That was really my foray into the virtual console. That was really my foray into the eShop and buying a lot of great games and not buying a lot of discs. Although I look over at my stack of Wii versus Wii U games and they're pretty equal, and they're not small. So
yeah. Is that game still worth getting?
I know something new. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I even got the 3DS version because it works with the circle pad.
Oh, really? Yeah. I might have to get that because I'm anyway, this Galaga one is kind of interesting because you can put it in kind of like a retro mode where, you know, it's all like pixel art. But, you know, kind of did you ever play any of the like the Space Invaders like remakes or remix games?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, basically it's like pixel art, but it still has kind of like cool effects and things going on, but, or you can play in kind of a newer way, but it's Galaga, except things are coming at you from all different sides rather than just from the top of the screen. And, it's more of a score attack game. It's not one that like you're unable to beat. It's more of like, you want to replay to try to keep getting higher scores because each level is timed. You have a certain time and you don't really beat the game per se, but you're trying to pull off like combos, and some enemies, when you shoot them, they'll explode and take out a bunch of other enemies with you. It's a really fun little diversion. And I bought it just thinking I'd play it once, but like sometimes when I'm just like, I've got 10 minutes, I'd like to play something. It's just a great little game to boot up. And I don't know, it might have been, because there's a few like remixed games like that. I wonder if there's like a physical compilation disc, because I'd like to, because already I'm a little worried that games like this might get it seems already the high score things have been shut off for this game already, but you know, I'm always worried that games like this are going to just disappear. I almost bought Final Fight Doubles Hit or something, or Double Impact, or until I read that it's one of those that has to detect a consistent internet connection or it'll turn off.
Oh.
And I'm like, really? To play Final Fight? Like, it's an arcade version of Final Fight. There's no online necessity to that game at all. But they did it as a form of DRM, you know, copy protection. Right. And even though the game's normally like, I don't know, $10-$15, and it was on sale for like $2, I'm like, pass.
Mm.
I can't get behind that.
That's too bad.
But yeah, but put it on a disc, I'll buy it. I'm easy. Well, put it on a disc, I'll buy it.
You know what I can get behind?
What can you get behind?
Awesome NES homebrew.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, you are going to talk about that one. Okay.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, let's do it.
Look, Kickstarter ended recently, which we did mention during our homebrew episode with Joe Grisafi. Last episode, as a matter of fact. I believe you squeaked in right at the end there, a little game called Super Russian Roulette.
Wait. Super Russian Roulette.
Yes.
That game's not out yet.
No, it's not, but
How can this be your future retro? You haven't even played it.
I watched part of the video and it seemed good.
You watched part of the video.
Yeah.
How much did you donate to that?
$75. I wanted the box.
So you watched part of a video.
Yeah.
You donated $75.
It was very compelling.
It's your future retro now. Okay, you didn't even watch the whole video. You convinced me to buy this.
Hey, I'm if I can do that, I can get these guys to back our Kickstarter.
You convinced me to buy a copy. I don't even have an NES. I don't have a Zapper. I can't even play this game.
Okay, you don't have a Zapper, but I did get one for you.
Thank you.
So we're there. We're almost there. We're nearly there.
Okay. It's a gray one, right?
It's a gray one. Yeah, I walked into Gaming Generations, and all they had out were orange ones. So shout out to Gaming Generations there. And I was like, well, I wanted a gray one, so I guess I'll be going. They're like, no, we'll go to the back and see if we have one for you. And they did.
I see. Because I don't want one of those orange ones.
No. Orange ones are terrible. People have told me.
Yeah.
They're like, they're surprised. Like, don't you want the orange ones? Like, no. See, this predates my identity as Sean Orange, and by almost two decades. And the reason it exists just angers me. So
let me just say that orange is the new crap.
Fair enough.
But yeah, all the guns were weird colors. Like the Saturn guns were all like orange and stuff. They still look like guns in Japan, actually.
Right, because you can't have real guns in Japan. There aren't you don't have the same problems we have here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some people have real guns here, but
right.
Yeah,
right.
Anyway. So your pile of shame is okay.
My pile is I can't even talk about games I've been playing because I'm not done with them or I'm saving them for something.
Did we talk about what Super Russian Roulette was in the last podcast?
I don't think we did really go into it much. It is an NES party game.
Yeah. It uses the Zapper, just like the real game of Russian Roulette.
And kind of go from there, right? Like the animation looks like speaking of hoaxes.
Yeah.
It looks too good in a way, you know?
And it's got like 3 minutes of speech on the cartridge as well.
Right. It's insane.
Oh, man. Wouldn't it be ironic if a couple of years from now that game doesn't actually come out?
Right.
That our episode on hoaxes ended with another hoax.
That would be beautiful. No, I mean, it's supposed to come out in January of next year.
Yep.
We'll see. You should have your NES and Zapper put together by then, I would imagine.
I would hope so.
Now, for those curious, we did put something up on the Facebook page, and some people suggested we actually discussed, which was, well, can we just do a converter? But I think the price of doing that would outstrip just getting the NES and the Zapper for you.
So. Yep. Plus, I mean, the nostalgia itch in me wants a real NES. I've been playing the NES cartridges that I bought last time I was in the States. I've been playing them on my Retron 5, but it's not the same.
Not only that, but you reminded me that it wouldn't work because the Retron 5 only goes out to HDMI, right? And
I mean, I could get a converter there too, but I mean, at this time, I don't know if it's worth it for this Frankenstein cobbled together system that's going to run. Although I really think that now that you have the Famicom gun that actually looks like a revolver, you should try to make it work just because that's the way this game should be played.
Ah, dude, spoilers. I haven't released that stuff Inc. sent me yet.
Don't.
Okay. I think that about wraps it up for this segment then.
All right.
To train your game, head over to our show notes at famicomdojo.tv/podcast for additional pictures, video, and bonus audio for this episode. Call us at 608-492-1923 to leave a voicemail for our Denchimail episodes, or send us a comment on Facebook or Twitter at Famicom Dojo. Consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes, and be sure to subscribe to Famicom Dojo on YouTube for our latest videos about retro, import gaming, and more. Yeah, so good to do an episode again.
Right.
We are, I mentioned the Kickstarter, we're still working on it. We had a little hardware failure, unfortunately. Nothing was lost, don't worry. It just meant that I was working on getting a new computer set up when I should have been working on the Kickstarter.
And that's also the reason the podcast went into reruns. Sorry about that, but I hope you enjoyed our reruns.
Yeah, one of them, because as of this episode, it'll have been almost a week since then. But it was the eight year anniversary of my first produced podcast, which is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy podcast. And the background for that is that some friends of mine and I from high school in 2000, which was 16 years ago.
Oh, man.
Post high school, even, so that doesn't help.
That's the year the Intellivision Next was launched.
Right. we did a version of the radio production of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that we did in Keith's basement. I believe it was Keith's basement, yes. And I played one of the two heads for Zaphod. So the project here was to sort of incorporate like the best of, like there were a lot of interesting things the radio original, I should say, radio versions did that the later updated book versions did not, and vice versa. And so the master plan here was to cobble them together into one slightly more coherent story. But like many of the projects that these guys and I did either together or separately, it never got finished, but there was a lot that was done. So I don't think I ever heard a completed product prior to, meeting these guys again about a decade ago. And they shared with me the raws of this and some of the completed stuff that they had had. And I was like, you know, guys, this, I'm really enjoying this. This is a huge trip down memory lane for me, but also I think the project's really interesting. Why don't we make a podcast out of it? And then hopefully my not so secret plan, cause I think I did say it to their faces, was if this is popular enough, maybe it'll motivate you guys to finish it. And so that's what happened. They had 2 out of 6 episodes that weren't done yet. The majority of the dialogue was recorded. They just hadn't mixed it finally. In the last 2 cases. And they explained why throughout the process of the podcast. There are 10 original episodes where we preview, and discuss the production, play the actual episode, and then the next episode we review what we had just talked about, preview the next one, and rinse and repeat until we get to the ones that weren't done. And do a little bit of filler. So I bring in Phil Bond, who you have heard about in this show and many others, I am sure. So he played the other head for Zaphod, if that is of any interest to you guys whatsoever. And if you don't know what I'm talking about with the multiple heads thing, well, I don't know. This might be your first introduction to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, in which case I am really sorry. But
what do you mean? You've just done them a huge favor.
I hope so. I hope so.
Right now, all of our fans are all of us people listening to this are fans, new or old, of Homestar Runner. So,
right.
Which I introduced them to.
Yes, good job. That was last episode. No, 2 episodes ago.
I don't know. We haven't recorded in
so
a long
many
time.
Episodes, but I mean Douglas Adams' connection. We took a science fiction course together.
Yes,
the year he died, and we were supposed to do a report on him.
Yes,
and like literally, he died that weekend.
Yeah, and then we were just too disheartened to do it.
My favorite thing that came out of that, if you can even say favorite, was, well, I mean, we intended to do this in the first place, but it ended up being like more of a memorial than it was a sort of fun thing to do. But we set the Beatles In My Life over. a section of the TV version of Hitchhikers where he plays some background character, essentially, over some narration. And it works out surprisingly well. Where he goes
naked into the ocean.
Yeah.
I don't even remember doing that.
I mean, basically, anyone can recreate that.
Yeah,
By just like taking that song and like starting at just the right spot in that sequence, because we didn't edit it at all. I don't think we just started and stopped, and that was it. So
do you still have that report?
It is possible. I have to look that stuff up because I was telling my wife about the short stories and stuff that I wrote in college, and I wanted to find that. I'm sure it's all together somewhere. I'm sure.
I know I don't have it anymore.
Just not on the current computer.
The computer that I used back then died completely and I lost everything.
Oh, no. Right. I'm sure I have a backup somewhere. I'll take a look. But for those interested in Hitchhikers and want to know more, please check that out. I'll link it in the show notes. The first episode is in the feed. So if you're like downloading on like RSS or iTunes, it should be the episode immediately preceding this one. Assuming I haven't taken out of the feed yet. But you can just look for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Powercast on iTunes, which honestly, even though it's only 10 episodes, plus 6 raw versions, and I've never done any advertising for it since it came out, it's the most popular podcast I've ever produced. I think the first episode is like 10,000 downloads alone. But yeah, so check that out if you want to. There, you can also actually, you know, purchase the actual radio plays themselves. And there was a secondary phase that was released that we talk about during the podcast that was partially used for some of the books later, partially totally excised. And then after Douglas Adams died, they adapted the 3 remaining books into radio plays, and they made some tweaks to make it a more coherent story with a happier ending, if that's your thing. But I really enjoyed it all the way through. Like this all happened at once for us, and it was a good project that kind of is a precursor to this podcast. So if you enjoy the Famicom Dojo podcast, you can thank this little project. And I apologize for how mealy mouth I sound. But I'm sure I've gotten a little bit better since then. I hope. Anyway. Cool. I guess then until next time, the dojo is...
running way over the expected running mark. Whoa, yeah!
Famicom Dojo.
The Famicom Dojo video game podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our theme songs, Famicom Thrash and RPG, were written and performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and at amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. Find us at famicomdojo.tv/podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. And, of course, head over to littlepodcast.com to listen to other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.